You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Tuesday, it's the 5 o'clock shadow dream team double header edition with Nick Kunzer from Sun and Private Wealth and David Shapiro from Sassoon Securities. And Nick, I have to come to you because I looked at the, I have to admit, gentlemen, I had an afternoon nap. I don't know if this is going to become a habit as you get older, David. You had an afternoon nap, but I thought, okay, it's 3:45. I'll have a quick look at the markets. And the all share, I think, was down close to 2%, Nick, and now it's almost halved its losses from its low. What happened today? Why was it down 2%?
Well, first of all, we can thank the Americans for dragging us higher, because in the last hour we were down by pretty much almost double. And saying that the US markets too, NASDAQ, S&P and the Dow Jones was quite badly in the red over 1%. But as it's been the theme recently, this volatility is rampant. I mean, we've chopped all the way back into positive. But initially, what spooked the market, guys, was the news from Target that they're going to basically downgrade their earnings and their outlook again.
Yeah.
And this is bearing in mind that they did it not so long ago. The stock was down 30%, but coming out again and saying it's still looking bad. The stock was down 8% pre-market. But I don't know why we've had the sudden reverse. I see Yellen was speaking earlier, David. You might have picked up some news flow from her talking about something about usual story with inflation, etc. I don't know what she quite said, but nevertheless, the market has turned positive now, so we can thank Wall Street for dragging us up. But overall, it was quite a negative tone from the bell at 9 o'clock this morning, quite frankly.
David, can you share some light,
Lindsay,
on this?
We had rates rushing up last night. Today they went the other way.
3.05. Didn't they go up to about 3.05%, the US 10 years?
Yeah. And we're back below 10. We're back below 3 now. Mm. So we gained about 10 points, lost 7 points. And I don't know whether there's just exhaustion. I can't find what happened. But, Lindsay, I sat through a lot of presentations today. Really, it was just – and all I heard was inflation for longer – lower growth, slowing growth, stagflation, corporate profits under pressure, falling liquidity, stimulus withdrawn. As we heard there, inventory surplus, from Target having to cut back. There are many more like that. Australia came with a shocker of an increase.
Ooh, that was
in
a shock. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
So you're getting all, and what happens? The market's stable. So, you're trying to say, I think this is just kind of flowing over everybody's head. And I promise you, the level of presentation I had to sit through, I couldn't understand. I don't know how these chaps manage to put these slides together. I don't know how they work on this, where the intellect, what I'm trying to say to you?
What do you mean?
I mean,
please elaborate.
I would do a little picture of maybe Mickey Mouse or something like this and try and explain. But I mean, these chaps are so highly intellectual and they quote from Shakespeare to Wordsworth to I don't know.
Okay.
Well, that's at the end of the day. I just feel totally insecure. But I look at the market and say, well, that's okay. I'm happy with where it is. So to be honest, Lindsay, I don't know whether this is just flowing over. Whether we've just had enough and taking a breather for the meantime. I'm dead scared to call the bottom now. But, to say, well, this looks like bottom forming because, some of this news has to abate. So our market took a bit of a knock. And I'll let Nick come in here, but I must say I've been totally confused by our market because it's up and down and up and down. And you know what the worst thing is that? I said, okay, I'm going to go back 5 or 6 years. Let's see where we are. And the sad thing is that if you even look at banks and so many of those companies that have kind of recovered, we're still way below where we were 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. We haven't made up anything, and I thought, oh no, this is just not what I needed, this is so anyway, I'm trying to clear my mind and trying to get I've got to do some talks later. So I can't go with an incoherent talk, with an incoherent message. I've got to get something coherent out of this head of mine. Yeah, at the moment, it's all over the place.
It's quite interesting because there is nerves out there, and I'm close to a company that has a listing. And when I was speaking to my friend who's the CEO, he said, yep, this was 3 or 4 months ago, he said, we're definitely listing July, August time. Definitely, it doesn't matter. And then I spoke to him yesterday and he said, actually, no, it's now October, November, given market conditions. So people are nervous. Mm. And the sponsoring bank and the sponsoring broker and everything, they're saying, well, let's wait a little bit. We don't have to be too rash on this. So there is an air of nervousness. And when you see the sort of volatility that Nick was talking about today, 2% down and then only 1.2% down wherever it is, that is not, it doesn't engender stability and quality. So, yeah.
And confidence, yeah.
Yeah, the same thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nick, there's two NIAs I need to talk about. And when I say NIAs, I mean Omnia and Signia. Omnia came out with their trading statement, share price currently on my delayed screen down 3.75%. Signia came out with their 6 month results, share price up on, again, my delayed screen, up 4.4%. Maybe Signia, Nick. This company is still relevant, isn't it?
Of course it is. Of course it is. Look, it's small on the sort of asset management global scale.
Yeah.
But, Machter and her team have built up a very nice brand, and they timed it very nicely with the push into ETFs and sort of passive investments. And I think they're reaping the benefits. And I think we all want the asset management business to do well. That's our industry.
Yes.
And I think it was, a decent set of results. Yeah, that's when it was good. Mm. And of course, timing's everything in this business. And I think their timing was impeccable a number of years ago when they, when it was the start of that popularity of ETFs. I mean, they timed it almost perfectly. But, after tax profit, I saw the headlines earlier on. I mean, jumping 31%. That's decent, huh? It's very decent. And HEPS increasing quite nicely too. But yeah,
I'm going to throw something into the pot.
Go on then.
I'd love Nick's view on this because, this is not my original thinking. I picked up this article in Business Day yesterday. Mm. With the increase of foreign exposure now in most institutions to 45%, that means you can go direct. You know, this is a big change. And suddenly the appeal that we had of local ETFs that are mimicking foreign ETFs or in some cases, you know, they're nothing more than feeder funds. Mm. Do you think this is the popularity of these is going to decrease and we'd prefer to go, direct?
For me, it's just education, isn't it? Because, yeah. I mean, for the average person on the street, there's not really exchange controls anymore. I mean, if you throw in your foreign allowance and what you can, each year, 11 million odd, this really, for the average person, the exchange controls don't exist. So you can go offshore very, very easily. But that's just education. And I think the JSC needs to up their game a little bit too, because, it's obviously detrimental if they try to push people away from their own boss. But you can invest anywhere. As a South African, pretty much. Yeah. But I tend to agree. I think there's over 3,000 ETFs, for example, just in the passive space. Not talking about direct equities. In the passive ETF space, there are 3,000 ETFs that trade very actively around the world. So yes, you can pick and choose. But I think also, for those who are not that sort of educated in financial markets, and it's not the easiest to get your head around at the best of times. I mean, we're still learning every day, aren't we, David? So sometimes you need a broker. Sometimes you need someone, and you're going to need someone to invest for you. I don't want to say anything detrimental about them, but they're certainly had a decent tailwind behind them, and their timing was impeccable. But I do think going forward, you'll probably find that wanes a little bit. As David has said, you can now invest 45% in offshore directly. And it's easy. I mean, you can literally log onto your cell phone, get an app and invest. So they might have seen, you might have seen the best of it for the time being anyway.
Yeah.
It's very interesting you talk about the 45%, David, because I interviewed a very clever chap from a large asset management company in Cape Town today, and he put out a piece that is entitled the following, How Much Offshore is Enough? And he goes on to say, the increase in offshore limits has become the greatest talking point for trustees, consultants, pension fund members, retail investors and fund managers. But greater flexibility also means more responsibility and potentially bigger return volatility. And what I said to him was, first of all, I thought the Rand would weaken immediately. And 5 years ago, if they'd have put out the 45% new rule, they did in the budget this year, I thought the Rand would have weakened dramatically. But this time, it came out and everyone said, okay, fine, SA's doing better. SA's only down 5% and other indices are down 15%. So we're outperformers. So the money hasn't immediately rushed overseas. Uh-uh. But the thing is, it's a good thing. So you look at the budget and you say, thank God, goodness, we can get 45% out now. Mm. But on the other hand, it does present problems and complications, and it makes your life a little bit more difficult, Nick.
Just to interrupt and add to that, you know, if the case studies that have been done on countries and certainly in emerging market space, it's known for capital controls and exchange controls, which we had for many years and still have to a certain extent. When those capital controls and exchange controls are lifted, the local currencies actually tend to strengthen. It actually, that is the historical fact. That's what does happen.
Well, it's the same as saying you can smoke marijuana. Not every, you know.
How you drag it into this conversation.
No, what I'm trying to say is that it was illegal and everybody would do it on the side, or some people would do it on the side. Now you can do it over, no one does it. You know,
but it also stems back. I don't know how it carves into a marijuana conversation, but it also stems back from that they did case studies with Russia, for example, obviously before the mess it's in now, but back when they became investable, and the idea was they simplified their taxes, they lifted the exchange controls, their tax. If you look at Russia, their tax sort of bracket is like literally like one page compared to ours. But it just became wasn't worth the effort for everyone to sort of move their money, hide their money, hire lawyers, move it around. They just simplified it, made it simple, and all of a sudden actually got flows started to go back in. And I think that's what you see with South Africa too. If you don't make it so complicated and you don't have all these excuses for people to have to, you know, hire lawyers to move their money, then what's the point? Just, you know, and the currency strengthens. So, I mean, that's the history behind it.
But David, from your point of view, as a fund manager, sort of semi-independent fund manager, if you don't mind me calling you semi-independent, since the 45% rule came in, have you increased your offshore exposure at the request of your clients?
I do mainly individuals.
Yeah.
So as Nick said, there's been no limits on what we can take out.
No.
And we've never had issues taking money out. So it's become when I say tighter, it's not tighter. It's just that the process takes a little longer, but it gets done. So we've had no issues with taking money out. In fact, also we have asset swap capability, and we've converted a lot of retirement annuities into living annuities, in which case you could take 100% offshore. So I've had no inhibitions at all. Where it would have helped, the odd retirement annuity that we manage, or Section 28 funds, what we have done is tended, because we've tended to go into local ETFs. In that case now, I certainly would open up an offshore account and or asset swap offshore and do individual shares. So yes, it would influence me.
And Nick, from your point of view, I don't know. I'm actually I've never really asked you, is it institutional business that you do, or a combination of institutional and retail? But whatever, has it changed your portfolio construction, for example, having that extra percentage?
Definitely. And I mean, we've been begging for this, and it just, you know, when you invest for client money, and whether it's retail or institutional money, you know, there's always been an argument you put together and construct the best portfolio. You want your clients to have the best exposure to, say, the best bank in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the best bank in the world, it could be Standard Bank in South Africa, it could be Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan in America or whatever. So you don't want to have to say, well, this is my South African investments and these are my offshore investments. You should be looking at it holistically. basically as one big investable universe. So as we've this has opened up now 45%, and I imagine over the years it'll cover will be more.
Yeah,
it's definitely a step in the right direction. It's good.
Very good. Okay, so we've covered Signia, we've covered Omnia, the only two major announcements on the stock exchange news service. So now we have to look at what's happened overseas, and we've already spoken about Target, which was horrible, and it's the second time it's been horrible. It was Target, and it was Walmart as well, wasn't it, Nick? We had those two last month doing the same thing.
Yeah, and interesting, and David can jump in. Sorry to interrupt, David. I was going to say, interesting enough, if you actually look at what's been coming on the retail space, Target, Walmart, the dollar stores, the lower spending group have been shocking. Their earnings, their warnings are left, right, and center. They're talking about they can't pass on the inflation cost has been a real thing. But then a couple of weeks ago, we had Burberry, LVMH, and David, what's the Italian company that, well, that, that owns a Gucci?
Kering.
And they've actually said no problems at all. They've passed on the inflation costs with one click of a switch, and their sales are exactly like it was. So they're planning out to be two very different spaces.
I'm going to give you an explanation that is not mine, that was given to me today. Yeah. So I'm passing this on from a very clever man who said that people are not buying goods anymore. In other words, they prefer to go on a coming out of lockdown. They want to start traveling. They want to do things like that. They're going on holidays, staying hotels, using their savings, and they're cutting down on goods. And goods means the TV sets that they bought, the computers that they bought, all the other durables that they bought during lockdown to get them through. Therefore, a lot of these places like Target, if you've ever been into a Target store, it's like a game. It's like a Walmart, you know. It is not a lot of food involved. It's mainly goods. And I think they're overstocked. I think they owe a lot of these companies bought a lot too much and expected a lot
too much inventory. In other words,
too much inventory. So I'm saying that's the explanation that was given to me, and it sounds plausible. It sounds plausible. Mm. You know that people are spending, but they've changed their patterns quite dramatically.
Okay, gentlemen, let's have a look at some spot prices now. And that rand is on a real charge today. Look at this thing. It's now $15.36, dollar rand, $15.36. Mm. British pound against the rand, $19.33. I don't know if Boris was good or bad for the pound. I don't know. Well, maybe if we have a chance, we can talk about British politics. Actually, no, forget it. I'm bored with it already. Euro rand is 16.44. Euro dollar, 107 on the nose, which is a 0.5% gain for the US dollar. And the cable, 125.80, which is unchanged, funnily enough. Onto commodities, gold is 18.50, which is up for fiver. Platinum has risen by $23 an ounce to $1,013, and palladium has fallen by $28 an ounce to $1,967. The all-important oil price, and I've changed my oil price screen, actually, because this one is much faster. Brent crude oil, $120.30 per barrel, up two-thirds, and West Texas, the American brand, up 0.2% to $119.28. And natural gas, well, I sent out a tweet today with a natural gas price, 9.31, which is it's about 250% up since March. Not March last year or the year before, but March this year. It's a massive, massive move. And there's some all sorts of things going up. But anyway, the CRB commodity index at a multi-year high again this morning. It just keeps on surging. It's up 41% this year, Nick.
Mad. Yeah, I saw your tweet. Yeah. Mm. And I also saw a very interesting note today from Goldman Sachs that was forwarded to me on their oil projections.
What did they say?
You know, $135 for West Texas this year and a few others. But
that's
what
brave.
What I find really strange is they had like 6 years out. Yeah. How on earth do you even know? I don't even know what the oil price is going to be like in 3 months' time, let alone 6 years out. It just seems like ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. Do people take these things seriously these days, David? I don't know.
I don't know how they can, because I know that note that you're talking about. And the problem is that the dynamics change so much. You know, America can pump more oil if they want to, if there's investment Mexico can pump more. A lot of nations can pump more.
Ukraine, Russia could sell their stuff. Could be more Russian oil coming back on stream. Who knows?
So I don't know how. I just think that trying to forecast commodities that long out is almost impossible.
It's impossible.
So commodities you play on a short-term basis, and you know that, Nick, from trading.
Yeah.
You can't
but also,
go
I love it when you see like a Goldman Sachs note, like you're like, so guess who's long.
Well, they were 150. Remember when it was 100, and we went back all the way. I don't think they've ever got anything right. But look, they talk with authority. They've still got a very strong name in the market, and all the media will quote them. But listen, it's who are we to argue with the great Goldman Sachs, you know?
But you talk about but David, you talk about the short-term nature of and cyclical nature of commodities, and you get in and out. I mean, I can understand that for gold, but if you'd have bought oil at $12 a barrel 2 and a bit years ago, you would have made 10 times your money, because it's been a relentless and ruthless and merciless and enduring bull market. It's gone up from $12 and in negative at one stage, but I'm going to call it $12 because it's easy for me to multiply. It's now from 12 to 120. That's not short-term stuff, David. Sometimes they go on a trot like iron ore did, for example.
Well, the world depends on it. The world became dependable on it. You know, there was no alternative. So, and when I say limited supply, you had OPEC who were controlling supply. And I think the world didn't mind it. You know, we liked it. We didn't do anything to counter it. We had the frackers came in at one stage, and as soon as they started to push out more oil, the clean energy proponents came out and started to, attack them. So instead of sinking new wells, we gave the money back. And anybody who mentioned fossil fuel, we jumped on them. And now all of a sudden, there's nothing to combat or to cover the shortfall in Russian supply. I mean, you know, the shortfall that Russia's supply is going to create. So who's gonna fix that gap? No one. So of course the price is going to go up. And this is the cost of banning Russian oil. Not that I disagree with it, but there's been no investment. In fact, it applied to all the miners. You know, after the boom, every miner I don't want to go back to this, but that's why no one in every mining head was replaced, because they went out on a binge and prices came down. They were all kicked out. And then the newcomer said, we're not going to spend anything more. We're going to return cash and be very careful. And now we're short of commodities. So.
Yeah, and also throw in the fact that to appease the greenies out there, I mean, good luck going to an investment bank and asking to borrow $10 billion to drill a hole in the ground. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
So investments is non-existent,
of
too.
Course,
so it's a bit of a sweet spot for the mining industry.
Goldfields,
and for commodities in general.
Goldfields buck the trend, of course. I mean, I don't consider gold to be a commodity. I consider it to be a currency. I mean, you don't buy gold and sell it to Tesla because they're putting it in their electric batteries or something. But Goldfields did go out on a limb, didn't it? And Nick, I don't think we've spoken about that. I've spoken about it with David because you were unavailable that night. But Goldfields has gone out and spent a very, very large amount of money on a mine called Yamana. Is it Yamana, David? Do you remember? What's the name of it?
Diluting their existing shareholding. So, I mean, they're just issuing new gold.
Yeah, I was going to say they're
same
spending
thing.
Shareholder money.
Oh,
so
exactly. Other people's money. Okay.
They're using people's future profits,
Okay. Right. What else have we got to say here?
They got whacked, and they're still down about over more than 20% from those levels. So market hasn't warmed to it. I thought there'd be a bounce at some stage.
No, I popped it back. Well, I was saying that it's up a couple of bucks today from where it was. It was 145 thereabouts. But interestingly, if you look at the share price on the other side, the company that's about to be acquired, you know, they've hardly budged either. So, I mean, if you had to look at the share price or prices like we like to look at, because that tells you everything, you know, the market's saying the steel's probably not going to go through, or it's certainly not going to go through at these levels. Yeah.
Okay.
The share price looks like goalposts. You know, those went up, down, flat, up, down. I'm just looking at Goldfields at, we were at 250 Rand. We're back at, 145 at the moment.
Which is a strange one because, I mean, you know, Mr. Griffith is a bit of a rock star in this business, you know? So it's not like him to get involved in something he doesn't see the upside. No, honestly, I mean, if you're going to back management, he's one of the one of the better ones out there. But anyway, always like seeing what the price is doing, and the price is saying now that, you know, we're not going anywhere in a hurry just yet. This is going to drag on for a while, I think.
Okay, gentlemen, a couple of other prices before Nick gives us the, or rather we look at the individual stock performances on the JSE Securities Exchange. The US 10-year has had a range today of 3.064% as a high for the yield, a low of 2.961%, and it's right on the low, actually, nearly. 2.966.
Point move for a 10-year.
Yeah, I mean, 2.97, it's just ticked up a tick. So that's all over the shop. South African 10-year bond yield, that's at a range of just over 10%, down to 9.915, and is currently 9.965%, which is strange. It's obviously following the overseas capital markets, because if it was following the rand, it would be stronger. The bond market would be stronger, the yield would be lower, but it's actually 7 basis points higher at 9.965. Bitcoin was merrily trading above 31,000 yesterday evening. It's now below 30,000, 29,788, which is down 5.55%. And S&P futures, as I speak, they were down, they weren't substantially down, but they were down earlier on, now up 0.2%, as Nick said earlier, 4,129. Now then, I'm going to give you...
Just looking.
Go on.
I mean, the volatility is remarkable. In a space that we've been talking.
Yes.
You've seen the S&P down, up, and down again. And I'm not talking points, you know, it's like 20, 30 points in each direction. The NASDAQ was up 0.4%. We're down flat again. So just gives you an idea of how uncertain things are, and just trying to read this is so difficult. Who's controlling it? I have no idea. But we have no, as we talk now, which is 2 hours into the trading session, and also we have absolutely no idea of how this market's going to close. You know, it could go anyway. Now that's when Nick goes to bed tonight, which will be after 10, or when he wakes up in the morning, he will have no idea what happened. I don't know why. Well, it's me. Rather talk about me, because I go to bed early, you know.
What time do you go to bed, David? You're not, obviously not going to be watching England, Germany tonight at 8:45.
What time is it?
8:45.
Yeah, I'll watch a bit of it.
Okay.
Maybe the first half, yeah.
All right. Then you'll have your take your slippers off.
Is it serious, or is this just...
No, it's that UEFA Champions League.
So you can change your whole team at half time?
The Nations League. No, it's a proper tournament, but I mean, the players are not interested. They just want to go home. They've had a long season. We spoke about this last night. Anyway, let's talk about the movers on the upside and the downside of the JSE. I'm going to get rid of all the rats and mice on the upside, and so I'm going to tell you that Life Healthcare up 2.5%, BHP Group up 2.1%. On the downside, Aspen down 3.75%. That's quite a
That's
whack.
That's interesting.
That's a really big whack. We'll speak
about that. Below 150, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Omnia down 3.7%. Impala Platinum down 3.6%. And Capitec has shed 3.4%. Nick, with your fancy screens, anything outside of those that really warrant attention?
Once again, MTN, 153, that's had a lot of pain, and that's given the oil price has not budged. So, but a lot of sort of hot air coming out of the fintech space, which MTN, I don't know, timing-wise, they didn't exactly time it well. They tried to resell themselves as a fintech side, so that hasn't worked out too well. And then the banks, I mean, given that really decent GDP number, we haven't even mentioned the GDP, which was a bit of a surprise to the upside. You know, we're constantly optimistic. But you would have thought the banks would have got a bit, but Capitec down 3.42%, Rand Merchant Holdings down 3.3%, Absa down 3.25%. So very different feel to market, given what I thought was, you know, reasonably positive local spin. And the Rand, 15.36. I mean,
that is a strange move from the banks,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that worries me a little bit, because I always said that, you know, financials tend to lead markets, so it doesn't bode too well, unfortunately.
Gross domestic product grew 1.9% in the first quarter, just to embellish what Nick is saying, in quarter-on-quarter seasonally adjusted terms, and by 3% year-on-year unadjusted for the first 3 months of the year. They're not bad numbers. I mean, that's a nice bounce back. Considering you've had floods and looting and all that sort of thing over that year period that they're talking about, that's absolutely sensational compared to the 1.2% which economists had predicted. And 1.7%.
Look, we haven't taken in the floods or anything. I think that's going to come in soon next year.
Oh, is that outside of the quarter?
It's quarter.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So and all the load shedding and everything. So I think the next quarter will be a little bit pressurized than that. So just bear that in mind. But I think even so, the first quarter was far better than I think anybody had penciled in.
Okay, Nick, please give us the closing JSE indices.
Okay, so yeah, well off the lows. In fact, about 500 points off the low. We closed at 70,318 on the JSE All Share. That's regaining the 70,000 level. We're briefly trading under it for about an hour to the close. So down 1.13%. So quite a decent finish, all things considered. Top 40 tradable index 1.25% weaker, 63,734. Mixed bag. Energy once again on the upside, up over 1%. Basic materials up 3/4. Industrials had a decent day, 0.72. On the downside, David spoke about Aspen down under 150. That dragged the healthcare index down 0.62%. And financials, another worrying sign there. That was down 1.84. Utilities down over 4%. And please tell me where all the traders are, because this is very, very
volume down.
17.4 billion. This is dire.
That's skinny.
There is just no volume.
It's been the whole week, Nick. Huh?
It's terrible.
But is it?
And UK's back at work, hey? So
this is sort of just no. But is it the European holidays and people? There was a European holiday in many, many countries yesterday, and then you had the 4-day weekend in the UK. Is it just that? Is it the sort of holiday hangover, if you like, Nick? Is it that influential on the JSE? I think it probably is.
Look, there's no doubt. No, when London's not open, there's no doubt about it. You can take 30% of the volume. I get that. You get that. They really are price makers. But a day like today, there shouldn't be 17.4, given. We've literally had a 2% down, another percent up, or 500 points up in the last hour or two. There should be decent volumes on both sides of it, and there's not. And I don't know if it's just bigger fish to fry. People are more worried about inflation, worrying about other stuff. Maybe investing is odd on their list. But I've also noticed a little bit of a drop-off, and the phone hasn't rung as much in the last couple of weeks, actually. My own personal experience.
That's interesting. Okay, and live Wall Street before we go, please, Nick.
Yeah, so we settled pretty much unchanged. The S&P 500, well off the lows and slightly off the highs. 41.23 the front month future. That's just up 2 points on the day. And we have the Dow Jones Industrials exactly on the flat line. 0.0, actually zero. As I'm quoting this now, it's flat. It's flat on the day. And NASDAQ is a little bit of bright on the side, up 12 points, 12,617. So, growth share back in favor, while value seems to be a little bit on the downside.
Final comment from you, David Shapiro, before you go to bed.
You know what? When Mick told me that MTN's been under a bit of pressure.
Oh, and Aspen as well.
The chart. No, but cool. Aspen the liking. And this is what worries me about the South African market. I mean, we've had a pretty good run since we hit the lows in 2020, but you know, if you bought MTN 6 years ago, you got your money back. Meaning, it's the same price as 6 years ago. So I'm so confused. Anyway, I tell you, I'm confused now because I've got quite a bit of work to be, you know, doing, and I'm trying to make sense of all of it. What do we do now? You know, what do we do, you know, with clients' money? Where do we go? Where do we find, you know, because you've always got to give them some kind of message. You can't go and tell them inflation's going up, stagflation. You know, you can't give them all of that. You've got to say, okay, we understand that this is where you should be. And I'm battling with that message.
Although, I mean, for people that might have been investing in Europe or savers, et cetera, all of a sudden you're starting to get more of a choice, that you are getting, you know, back into fixed income products, back into sort of, you are going to get rewarded for being a little bit more in cash. Not that we can stick our client money into cash, but I think you are starting to get a little bit of, well, we said this on the show a few weeks ago, didn't we? We said at least we are getting slowly returning to some sense of normality. You know, we're getting out of this ridiculous, you know, decade of interest rates, and we'll see this week, ECB this week, you know, they're going to more, maybe they put rates up now, but it's penciling for July, but, you know, all of a sudden, getting back to a sense of normality, which I think we all need, the whole marketplace needs it, and clients need it.
Yeah, but, you know, even our market is just starting to look a little toppy now. I was looking at transaction capital, because each day I've been seeing, it's giving up 0.25%, a 0.5%, and every day. And it just rolled over because in March it was like 42 Rand. It ran up to 52 Rand. I thought, no, we were great. Wonderful results out of the company. Can't criticize the business. They're doing very well. And all of a sudden it's all the way back to 42 Rand. I was like, okay, when did that happen? And I didn't quite understand that. So, there's a little bit of edginess moving into our market as well after what has been a pretty good start to the year. You know, I say it's start to the year against what we've seen offshore.
Even in dollars, we're an outperformer. We've done well.
But it's looking toppy, and as you mentioned, with those bank shares as well, saying that shouldn't have been happening.
And Nick, just this will come back to bite you. You always say that the banks lead the market. You always said that. So if you look at today, what David was saying about the market looking a little bit toppy, perhaps the banks have signaled something worse to come. But anyway.
I hope not. I hope not. But yeah, you can't ignore these moves. And my experience tells me that there's probably a little bit more selling to come at this rate.
Okay, gentlemen. Hopefully not. Hopefully you're wrong for once in your life, Nick. Nick Kunzer is from Sandham Private Wealth. David Shapiro is
the good news, Lindsay. You got to end off with good news. The good news is everything happens in the second half of the year. Everybody will say, wait until the second half of the year. Will we getting there?
Yes. Of course, what is it now? It's June. Okay, we've got 3 weeks until the second half of the year. Yeah. Okay, all right, 3 weeks to endure. Gentlemen, I've endured you, and it's been a fantastic endurance. Thank you very much. Nick Kunzer, as I said, Sandham Private Wealth, David Shapiro, Sassoon Security, with his drawstring pyjamas on, toddling off, and he's from Sassoon Security, as I said, and we'll be back together as a threesome on Thursday night, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.